The next case of the morning is number 043861 and 62, Native American Arts Incorporated against Hartford Casualty Insurance. Mr. Mullen.
Please, the court, Your Honors.
First of all, I just want to note that there has been a settlement, which I'm sure the court knows about, involving a Great American Insurance Company, and so therefore their issues, arguments, and briefs are should be disregarded, I guess, at this point. The remaining defendants are the two Hartford insurance companies. We're here today because the district court held that the case presented a duty to defend. We were there on a summary judgment, partial summary judgment for duty to defend, and the court, district court, held that there was indeed advertising activity and advertising injury based on catalogs, brochures, sales material that, as the court said, fits squarely within the policy terms.
Mr. Mullen, I want to ask you, in what sense is a suit under the IACA a suit for advertising injury? As I read the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, a plaintiff doesn't have to show that either the plaintiff or the defendant engages in advertising, let alone that the defendant in any way copied or misappropriated any aspect of the plaintiff's advertising. All that the plaintiff has to show is that the defendant offers or displays for sale or sells some good in a manner that falsely suggests that the item is a Native American product, right?
Correct.
So where does, you know, in what sense is it a suit under?
Well, because the IACA presupposes advertising. It's a truth in advertising statute, and advertising is inherent in that thing. But we're not contending, Your Honor, that because there's a violation of the IACA, that there's a that there's coverage under the insurance policy. We're saying that the insurance policy covers advertising injury, and these set of facts do indeed constitute advertising injury to the plaintiff, Native American Arts, there. And that's the gist of the case. In other words, it's a contract claim under the insurance policies and not a claim under the Indian Arts and Crafts Act for the underlying circumstances.
I wonder, Mr. Mullen, if you could turn your attention to the ground on which the district court did wind up relying. I know there are a lot of arguments in the alternative in Hartford's brief, but the one that the district court finally settles on is the exclusion from the coverage for advertising injury for trademark-like things, which you say really is a way of talking about the Lanham Act, even though it says, you know, or other designations of origin or things like that. The thing that troubles me about that, aside from just the generality of the language, is that the comment made in this court's recent decision in the Waldron case, where we say, in effect, the regulation, that's the one under the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, makes Indian the trademark denoting products made by Indians, just as Roquefort denotes a cheese manufactured from sheep's milk, etc. I'm sure you know the quote. That gets really close to saying that this statute is so close to trademark that this kind of exclusion under general language like that in the insurance policy ought to apply, don't you think?
No, I don't, Judge. That comment I read as a rationale for the decision made in that case. I don't think that's a definitive ruling that it's a trademark. Indeed, the IACA is not a trademark claim. It's sui generis. It's completely different than a trademark claim.
It's not completely different. You would agree that there's some overlap. I mean, there's trademark in the sense of, you know, Pampers diapers or, you know, are trademarked. But there's also, there are designations of origin, whether it's, you know, that the French will only let you call something champagne if it comes from that part of France, or the Roquefort cheese, or Indian means really Native American, you know, Indian, not somebody who's just being Indian-like. Don't you think it's more of a continuum?
I don't, Judge, for this reason. Because they are entirely independent, different causes of action. Again, when you're talking about a trademark, you're talking about a private property right. You're talking about protecting an investment of somebody who spends a lot of money to make Coca-Cola a famous trade name. When you look at the IACA, you're talking about consumer protection and protecting Indians, jobs, and employment.
I don't see the consumer protection element at all in this. Mm-hmm. This is a producer protection statute. It's a statute that allows those who make these items to represent themselves in a certain way.
But in any event, it's a duty. You're talking about the IACA creating a duty, a public law involving a public duty. There's no investment. There's no protection of the property right. When you look at the trademark and similar type intellectual property issues, you're talking about a private property right. And that's a distinction that I think is very, very important, particularly when you get into analyzing the phrase other designation of origin or authenticity.
But why, from an insurance point of view, is the distinction you're drawing important? There are certain ways that you prove infringement of a trademark, trade name, service mark, or other designation of origin. Sometimes, you know, you have to show consumer confusion. Maybe you have to go out and do surveys. It seems to me a lot of the functional things are the same.
Some of the evidence may be similar, Judge, but again, you're not proving the same ultimate crux facts.
But now, what the insurance company is concerned about is what is it insuring, and it has carved out whatever other designation of origin or authenticity may be.
But that language, first of all, we're talking about an exclusion, so that it must be strictly construed against the insurance company. Secondly, they have to be able to show that it's clearly covered by that exclusion in order to have any effect to it. And the whole thrust, if you would, has to be that the insured knows what it is that's covered and isn't. And when you get into a phrase like trademark, trade name, service marks, and other designation of authenticity, you don't know that. The person who's buying the policy doesn't do it. And when you take the law, and it's clear, well settled, that the language of the insurance policy must be construed strictly, then I think that you have to decide whether or not that one phrase can be taken out of the exclusion and applied to a bunch of other disparate, different type, independent causes of action. And that's where we're here.
Obviously, you agree that we need to make this language mean something, other designation of origin or authenticity. And I take it the only suggestion you have is that it coincides with the Lanham Act. But that's not what it says. It just says other designation of origin or authenticity. And there are lots of geographic designations of origin, Belgian chocolates, you know, on and on. I mean, there are quite a few of them.
What we say, Judge, is that phrase, trademark, trade name, service mark, or other designation of authenticity, must be construed consistent with, under the interpretive guidelines, with trade name, and we say that they all cover intellectual property rights. And if you look at the O2 policy, the insurance company refined their language, and they said, in effect, that what we're talking about is an intellectual property right such as trade name, trademark, service mark, etc. And we say again that what they intend to cover with that phrase other designation of origin and authenticity is an intellectual property right, like a trademark, trade name, etc. And the IACA is not, cannot be construed as a property right. There's no right in an Indian or anybody else who's covered by that statute as to any property.
Well, there's a cause of action, right?
They have a cause of action.
Why is that not a property right?
They have a cause of action for the violation of a duty not to falsely suggest the property is Indian made. That's materially different than the trademark situation where you're developing the trademark Coca-Cola and you're going to protect it against, well, it belongs to Coca-Cola. Here we're talking about a duty involving a public duty and a public duty applicable to many people versus individual property rights. And I think that's a distinction that is very, very significant there. Now, on that trademark exclusion, we cited the Ortloff case, which we think is very, very significant. In fact, I think it's dispositive. And that's the case where this court held that a phrase, any customs or excise officer or other law enforcement officer, and the question was the interpretation of other law enforcement officer. It's very similar to the language in the insurance policy. And there the court held that it did not include prison officials because it was too broad, and that it made superfluous the other portions of the phrase, the entire phrase, any officer of customs or excise. Likewise, if you take the other language, the other designation of authenticity, and you apply it to some other statute like the IACA, then you are making superfluous trademark, trade name, service mark, and all the other refinements made in the third year of the policy change of intellectual property rights. And we submit that that can't be the appropriate right. We also cited the Red Ball case where this court held that in similar type of construction, you would apply it only to real property, even though it talked only about property, because the type of property involved in that clause was all real property. Even though it didn't say real in there, you would construe it only as real thing. And while that interpretive guideline is generally accurate, it's even more so in terms of an insurance policy that must be strictly construed when it's an exclusion like this against the insurance company. And it has to be absolutely clear, because if it's not clear, then the parties who are out there buying insurance don't know what they're getting. And that's certainly the situation here. There's no way that these manufacturers could have known that this phrase would be applied against not only.
It's a matter of common sense. It does seem to me that what we're talking about at a minimum is authenticity. Is it an authentic Indian artifact, or is it, you know, something churned out from a factory in Indonesia that has, you know, Navajo dream catcher put on it? Isn't that about authenticity?
That is about authenticity. But just the fact that it's that the statute, the IACA, covers authenticity, and as one of many elements, you can have many types of causes of action under the IACA that don't involve authenticity exactly the way Your Honor phrased it, that should not dictate the strictly construed language under the insurance policy that we're talking about here. We think they're different, different animals. But there is one thing I wanted to point out to the court, and that's this. The court, in finding that there was advertising injury and advertising activity, but applying, we think, misapplying the trademark exclusion, overlooked the fact that there's another exclusion called the infringement of title exclusion that's an exception to the trademark exclusion. And that's in the third year. So we assert, and we hope that the court will look very seriously at, the fact that we have an exception to that trademark exclusion in the third year, which is that we show that there's been an infringement of title, and I'll address that in a moment. The result of that is that if there is indeed a duty to defend for that third year, and you don't have to resolve it by way of the trademark exclusion, you can resolve it by way of the infringement of title issue. If there is a duty to defend on the third year, then there's a duty to defend on all years, because if there's a duty to defend in any part of the case, the insurance company has to defend all of the case. That's well settled. There's no real question about that. The result of that is that if this court finds that we're correct on the infringement of title, then it need not get into or resolve, technically, it need not, this question on the trademark exclusion at this time. And we assert that the infringement of title does indeed apply here. Title there is that all of the advertising of Native American Arts is all premised on authentic Indian-made products. That's all they sell. That's what they advertise. That's the gist of their advertising. That's the main thrust of what it is. And they designate their items as Indian-made. And what happened here is that there is an infringement of title of that designation of Indian-made when the defendants in the underlying case are asserting that their property, that their products are Indian-made, and they are then infringing our designation and label.
You know, I had the impression that there was at least a slight tension between this brand, and you're entitled to argue in the alternative if you want to, but between this part of your argument and the other part about the meaning of the origin and authenticity exclusion, because in your brief at page 19, you're talking about infringement of title, and in the footnote, you say numerous courts have concluded that trademark infringement claims come within the offense of infringement of title, and you go on to discuss that a little bit further. But it seems like for that purpose, you are saying that it's an awful lot like a trademark, and for the other purpose, you're saying that it isn't. It's page. It starts at page 18 and goes over to page 19.
Yeah. There are certain, as Your Honor indicated, concepts and ideas in trademark law that because there is no development of the IACA law until just very recently, that we borrowed, if you would, from trademark. But those are concepts, legal concepts, legal determinations. And by doing so, we do not assert, we do not mean, and we certainly want to make it clear here that we're adopting trademark law as being applicable in all situations or that we're involved with a trademark. It's just trying to draw some authority, if you would, from other concepts and other bodies of law. So, but on the issue of the infringement of title there, the insurance company talks about that the designation has to be broader, I guess, than we've asserted it. And there's a case, Charter Oak Fire Insurance Company cited at the reply page 5, that talks about the undefined reasonable expectations of a party, just exactly what we're talking about here, not only in infringement of title, but also in the trademark exclusion, that must be considered in applying the requirement of a strict interpretation against the insurance company. And there's a very key case that we cite, which is the American Cemental case, which involves cattle.